Coria.
Here.
Mathis.
Here.
Ambrose.
Here.
McWhorter.
Here.
Minto. Minto.
Oh, I'm sorry. I
believe
you
served here. Here will be okay.
Rios.
Here.
Roberts. Salas. Sankey.
Here.
Zach.
Okay. We have the first item is approval of the minutes of July 28th. I should say, as we start the meeting, that I'm going to change the order of things a little because we have only one item for discussion following the closed session. So I'm going to take that in advance of the closed session and close out our business such that the closed session will be the last order of business before we adjourn. So that way people won't have to wait around for the end of the meeting while we're in closed session. So having said that, then I'll ask for the approval of the minutes of July 28th, unless there is a comment for it. Okay, for moved by Ms. McWhorter. Is there a second? A second from Ms. Bragg. No further discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I do have four public comments this morning and a public comment request, I should say. Ah, here it is. And one of them has asked to cede his time, Speaker 2, Ms. Get these in their order. All right. And Sandra Compton has asked to cede her time. I'm not going to cede the full time because if you're here to speak for 3 minutes, you're here to speak for 3 minutes. I'm not going to give 6 minutes to anyone, but I will, in this case, grant 5 minutes on the basis of that. The first speaker is Steve Padilla. Mr. Padilla, you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Steve Padilla, once again, on behalf of Grand Central West, to update you with respect to a couple of interesting developments in the ongoing matter of the unfortunate litigation and unfortunate and unwarranted policy of this body with respect to that building at 727 East San Ysidro Boulevard, the McDonald's Trolley Station building. The City of San Diego has now reviewed, submitted plans, and fully permitted the subject doorway and opening, which leads to the intercity bus terminal. I know at some point in the past, members of this board, I think, have been advised that there were structural and safety concerns and issues that may present a liability for you as an excuse to justify the policy for trying to choke off direct access between that building and the bus terminal. That has, in fact, been proven false. That has been reviewed by the City of San Diego. There are, in fact, no structural or safety issues with respect to the second floor of that building. And we now hold, and you have a copy in front of you, of the building permit issued by the City of San Diego. In addition to that, we would respectfully but urgently urge you once again to reconsider this ill-considered policy and expenditure of public funds to choke off direct access for your constituents, namely your most vulnerable, those who have developmental disabilities, elderly, laden with baggage, because of your policy of litigation, of seeking to choke off this access, you are adversely affecting your own traveling public who seek to directly and safely access the bus terminal from your busiest trolley station at San Ysidro. In addition, it has recently been revealed that despite this as yet to be explained policy, and the fact that you may now well be going to trial on the question of whether or not that is in fact a public way, and also may be now going to trial on the question of whether this body violated California law when you sole sourced without going out to bid this ill-conceived contract to SYPS. In addition to your litigation, which you may be going to trial on, you've been spending public funds paying the legal bills of SYPS in addition to your own. This policy is indefensible. With all due respect, it is not a wise use of public land and resources to the detriment of your own constituents. The charter of this body is to do the best it can to operate the best transit metro system in the region for the benefit of the transit riding public. This policy is not justifiable, and we would again urgently request that this body revisit it, get in the loop on the details and history of this issue, and get control of your staff, because this is bad, and it is harming your own constituents. And I again implore you to please revisit this policy and turn it around. This should be a relationship not that is adverse with a neighboring long-standing property owner, but this should be a collaboration with local property owners and businesses in San Ysidro. This should not be this conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Padilla. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'll call Miguel Aguirre, and you have 5 minutes, Mr. Aguirre.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Miguel Aguirre. I'm the managing member for Grand Central West. And they say there's two sides to every story. I'm here to tell mine. It's a simple story, really. I'm a native San Diegan. Both my parents are from Mexico. I grew up crossing the border my entire life for cultural reasons, shopping, eating, haircuts. I remember coming back across the border and getting in a vehicle line. It was fascinating for me to see all these cars. If the line was longer than 15, 20 minutes, we'd start honking. It was great. We'd cross the border and we would drive half an hour to get to our home. And the thought, you know, that was it, just across the border and no more, you know, Mexico fun trip. I went on to graduate from Point Loma College and begin a career in commercial real estate. I went down to the pedestrian port of entry in San Ysidro and saw for the first time a brand new trolley station, a brand new McDonald's next to the pedestrian port of entry. It was incredible, dynamic, and I guess you could say I fell in love with that whole dynamic because I had never experienced the pedestrian dynamic. So I became a commercial broker and brokered the first factory outlet on the West Coast, which went on to become Las Americas, did the first two shopping centers at the then new Otay Mesa border crossing. But it was this McDonald's who I had seen and told my dad one day, Dad, and kept calling me. I went on to broker and represent national tenants and developers throughout Southern California. And in 1992, my dad took an early retirement to start a mailbox business there in what is now the Century Building. And we began cultivating relationships with the business owners and with McDonald's. Around that same time, MTDB began planning for a second trolley line and hold community workshops. I remember working with Bob Robenheimer, Paulette Duve, Harvey Estrada, Pete DeBlang, Estrada Land Planning. All the designs over the next 10 years really ended up centering around the McDonald's building. In 2002, the design was pretty much set. Properties were taken that were vetted by the community, including a portion of our neighboring parking lot. And during that time also, MTDB had been in very well documented negotiations with McDonald's, owner of then, corporate, for the use of the second floor, which would require an elevator and remodeling the second floor that had never been built out. And McDonald's decided that was outside their wheelhouse. They listed the property for sale with a big broker in LA, and in a very competitive process, we bought it and immediately went to MTS and said, wow, we got the building, we can fulfill the vision that had been designed and vetted. And things started to go off track, I guess, because it went off to a request for proposal public bid process, and we were one of the responders, and internal documents show with MTS that we were the best offer, but it was awarded to ACE. And the third proponent for operating the buses was the Board of Transportation Council, with a coalition of intercity carriers that included Greyhound. They were refused because of the conflicts of interest. And that, I believe, set a precedent for policy that should have governed future events. I went on to join the planning group and advocate for more emblematic cross-border pedestrian development, and presented a concept for a Grand Central. I call it then, and I call it to this day, La Gran Central de San Isidro, a celebration of San Diego-Tijuana relationship. And it really looks at the cross-border pedestrian mobility, because if you look at what has happened over the last 30 years, we've had public planning displace our community with an expansion of the port of entry, with at-grade trolley expansion, not really resolving our mobility conflicts. And our ports of entry, border-wide, really, these Mexican cities
Your time is up, sir.
Vehicle-oriented. Well, I'd love to share with everybody the rest of the story and a vision I have that will elevate the trolley and MTS. Thank you very much.
Final speaker is Stephen Heberle. Mr. Heberle. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Stephen Heberle. I'm here on behalf of the Equinox Project from the Center for Sustainable Energy. You have in front of you our 7th annual Quality of Life Dashboard, and some of you have seen the report before, maybe in past years, and some of you maybe have already gotten a presentation this year, so apologies for the overlap, but I'm sure your friends will love a copy if you have an extra one. So I'm excited to provide you with a copy of the 7th annual Quality of Life Dashboard. The idea here is to enlighten your decisions as policymakers and your understanding of sustainability is affecting all of the region. We objectively examined 15 different sustainability indicators here in the dashboard, charting emerging progress in areas of economic prosperity, housing, water, climate change, and most, you know, pressing to this body is transportation. And we cover all transportation issues, not only use of public transit, but active transportation, and how many hours of delay folks are spending out on the roads and in the highways. So we hope this can be used by you as a tool for you guys, if you have community leaders that you're in touch with or business leaders that you're in touch with. The idea is to quickly and concisely obtain perspective on the current status of these emerging trends affecting all of our quality of life. So. Finally, just want to say, you know, you guys are all faced and presented a lot of information on a daily basis, being elected officials and leaders here in the region. And a lot of it contains a lot of data, but we know that the data alone don't provide balanced solutions. So we also, with the trends in the dashboard, provide some policy recommendations and just context to what's happening around the region. Some nice looking graphs as well, so hopefully you can utilize it as a tool to help help shape our entire region and your constituents in a powerful way. So that'll be it for my comments. I appreciate the time here, and if you have any questions about the dashboard, our website and contact information is on the inside, and I'd be happy to come to your legislative body and talk about it as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the final speaker under public comments. I'll note for the record that the folks who have spoken from Grand Central West, that for the benefit of the board, that will be a subject in closed session under item 24C. So we will discuss that. All right, the next item is the consent items, and that's item 6 through 19. Is there anyone who wishes to pull any of those items for discussion? Yes, Ms. Cole. Okay, which item was it? That was item 8. Yes. Okay. We'll then excuse that from the motion on the consent agenda, and we'll discuss that right afterwards. Okay, any others? Otherwise, I'll take a motion for the consent agenda. Who was that made the motion? Okay, Mr. Yassel and Mr. Minow second. No further discussion. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? No. Okay, back to item 8, Ms. Cole.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I know that we're making progress in awarding DBE contracts, but there's a question about the completion. I'm wondering why are they not completing, are they not skilled enough or trained enough to complete these projects? But I know that we're doing outreach, I know that we're doing workshops, but what is the discrepancy between the awarding and the completion of these projects?
There actually isn't a discrepancy, they're just totally different numbers, totally different contracts. So what the numbers are is that during the 6-month reporting period, we report all of the contracts we award. So we have somebody come in and we issue an award, and it's that total value of that contract for the federal dollars. And then the same thing is, but those contracts, some of them might be short performance. You know, we buy something, it's done within that reporting period, or it might be a 5-year contract for janitorial services. So the numbers of what is completed in the 6-month period don't track with the numbers of what's awarded. So we do what are the contracts that the termination date, so the end date of that contract, either because it was we buy something so the transaction is done on the same day we award it, or because we awarded a contract 3 years ago and the last date on the term of the contract fell within that 6-month period. So when you look at the contracts awarded and contracts completed, they don't say anything about whether or not the contractors adequately performed. They're just totally different buckets of contracts and numbers.
Got it.
Different data.
And we haven't had any problem with people performing their contracts.
Great. And I see that we're doing better in outreach and workshops.
Yes.
And we're reaching our goal as far as participation is concerned, in your opinion?
Our technical participation for the DBE right now, this is the first 6-month period in our 3-year or year, so we fell below the 3.75% goal, but the intent of that goal is cumulative over those 3 years. So there's going to be 6-month periods where we have lower performance.
Okay.
And we're doing everything we can to try to encourage DBEs to apply or to bid on projects, and we're monitoring it. And to the extent we see anything that works and helps, we'll be implementing that. And, you know, we are in a difficult position. I know I've said this many times before, is a lot of the things we spend our money on are bus parts, you know, trolley parts, things that you can't buy from a DBE contractor. And so it makes it very difficult. So we try to target the contracts where we know there is a pool of DBE contractors, and, you know, we're constantly implementing, looking at new strategies, and we're hopeful that we're going to meet our goal.
Thank you.
The other thing, too, is, you know, the way it's reported, we could issue a nice DBE contract, let's say, to a janitorial service over at Transit, and you get credit for it in 1 6-month period, even though it lasts for 5 years. And it may last for 5 years and be extended by a year or two. But once it's reported in that first 6-month period, you never get credit for it again. But it's just the way these reports are designed to report on.
No, thank you for the explanation. I really appreciate that. And I'll go ahead and move the item.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, is there a second? Yes, sir, Mr. Minto. No further discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Okay, we're going to go now to item 30, and Dennis Desmond will come up and tell us about the transit optimization plan known as TOP.
Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to introduce the topic today. The Transit Optimization Plan is a new project that we're starting. You may recall that about 10 years ago, MTS did a comprehensive operational analysis. This was about the first time that we'd ever really done a comprehensive look at our entire system. This was in the 2004 to 2007 timeframe, and in fact, MTS was one of the first agencies in the entire country to do this. The goal at that time was to increase ridership and to make our system more productive and more efficient. We'd seen a trend of downward trend of ridership and decreasing efficiency throughout the system. This was an opportunity to step back and look at the entire network and see what improvements we could make to meet new market demands. We convened a Blue Ribbon and Citizens Advisory Committees made up of government agencies, stakeholders, public, and our riders. Those committees guided our approach and came up with a plan for a sustainable and a emphasizing sustainability and productivity. We did data collection in 2004, 2005, and implemented the plan in 2006, 2007. The results since then have been a 20% increase in ridership and increasing efficiency over the past 10 years. However, since the COA, a lot has happened within our agency. While we collected data from 2003, 2004, Mission Valley East light rail opened in 2005. We've since incorporated National City Transit and Chula Vista Transit into our services, and we've opened four new rapid transit routes, bus routes. We also had a roller coaster, budget roller coaster in 2008, 2010, where we made some significant cuts to services, and we've been methodically reintroducing some of those services as budget has allowed since then. All of this culminated in a record ridership year in FY15 of almost 97 million passengers. We've seen that number come down in FY16, so that's one of the reasons why we're looking at this again. And then a couple new projects, obviously South Bay Rapid is coming in 2018 and then Midcoast in 2021. Externally, there have also been a lot of different things happening. TNCs, Uber and Lyft weren't around in 2005. Bike share, car share, a lot of government initiatives, community plan updates, emphasis on greenhouse gas reduction, sustainable communities, active transportation, et cetera. A lot of these issues were not at the forefront back when the COA was conducted. So now that we're at the 10-year mark of implementation of the COA, it's a good time for us to step back and look at our system again to make sure that we're still on the same footing and we still have our system based on what the market needs are. So we have a new update project called the Transit Optimization Plan. We're maintaining the strategies from the COA because we feel that the principles that this board has maintained through our Policy 42 are still valid. We're going to continue the COA strategy of using significant public and passenger input, taking a very close look at our ridership, doing a route segmentation, to look very closely and drill down to see where riders are using this system and how they're using it, and to do a market analysis to see what markets we aren't meeting with the current system. We've actually already started the public outreach process. We have an online survey that we have, as of now, over 700 responses to. We're hoping for approximately 1,000. We've been out promoting that survey at 15 different outreach events that started last week and continue through today, all throughout the region. And then throughout this fall, we're going to be collecting data, and then later this year, developing some service proposals, which we'll again take out and have some more outreach, make some adjustments based on that outreach, and begin implementing changes in the middle of next year. As with the COA, we'd like to bring on a consultant to assist with some of the technical aspects of the project, including the data analysis, the market research, drafting the implementation plans, and then some of the scheduling support activities. We also have optional tasks on this, which are the feeder bus plans for the South Bay Rapid Bus, again opening in 2018, and the Midcoast Trolley Extension opening in 2021, as well as updating our Designing for Transit manual, which dates back to 1994. We started a procurement for that consultant in June with proposals due in July of this year. We had an evaluation committee with staff from planning, marketing, and finance departments, and we received three responsive and responsible proposals from Nelson Nygaard, Transportation Management and Design, and Steer Davies Gleave. We rank these proposals on a variety of factors, including the qualifications of the firm, the proposed staffing and management plan, the work plan, and then the cost and price. Through the initial ranking process, TMD was the highest technical ranking, transportation management and design, which is also the consultant that we worked with on the COA. Nelson Nygaard was second, and Steer Davies and Gleave was the third. We invited TMD and Nelson Nygaard in for interviews and also to submit revised proposals and bids. In the second round, TMD had the highest technical score, so we requested a best and final offer. You see TMD's best and final offer here of $431,000, and that includes all of the tasks within the TOP as well as the optional tasks. TMD's cost was higher. However, they ranked technically higher based on the experience of the firm, the proposed staffing. We felt that their work plan was the best of the three, and they also represented the best value. TMD proposed significantly more hours than the next contractor, Nelson Nygaard, almost 4,000 hours versus under 3,000 for Nelson Nygaard. So in the cost per hour, we actually get a better value from TMD. Again, TMD was also our consultant during the COA. That was a very successful partnership that we had with them. We had a very collaborative approach with TMD's staff working very closely with our staff, and we are very confident in the experience. TMD has also done a number of COAs throughout the, probably dozens of COAs throughout the country in the 10 years since our COA. And to my left here is Russ Chisholm. Russ Chisholm is with TMD. And I'll turn it over to you, Russ, if you'd like to say a few words.
Thanks, Dennis. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. As Dennis indicated, we worked closely with staff in undertaking the COA about 10 years ago. We considered it a very positive, cost-effective experience for both ourselves, but also MTS. We're a local company. We've been working with MTS. We've been heavily invested in local mobility here in San Diego for the last 25, 26 years. And frankly, we would love the opportunity to work with MTS in taking this next step. Thank you.
Thank you, Russ. So we have a recommendation today to authorize the CEO to execute a contract with TMD for the provision of consultant services for the TOP from September through June of next year.
I'd just like to make a comment to the board that we're getting very positive responses from the people we're talking to about this proposed plan. I think there's a lot of excitement built around promoting transit right now. You know, there's a ballot measure that could potentially be bringing in some extra funding, and so we're finding that the public is very much excited about this, and we're hopeful that we're going to get as much feedback as possible throughout the process. And with that, I'll turn it over to the chairman.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Just a couple questions, given that I think most of us, well, several of us weren't here in 2004, 2006. Who actually, was a comprehensive operational analysis conducted in-house, or was that done also through a contract?
It was a mixture. We did use TMD during the COA, but again, it was a mixture of staff and TMD. During this TOP, TMD is doing a smaller portion of it. For example, all of the outreach we're going to do in-house with our own staff as part of the TOP, whereas TMD handled some of that during the COA. Okay. So it's a little bit of a mixture, but we also used a consultant during the COA.
And the one thing that is different today is that during the COA, we basically learned, the staff was kind of educated on how to do this themselves, which is right. What has helped us through the budgetary recession that we had and, you know, the service cuts that we were forced to implement. We were able to stay true to what the sort of the broad policies were and maintain a network that still enhanced ridership and kept up with demand. So yeah. That's the difference today, is we can do a lot more of it in-house because we are now experts.
And that was going to be a follow-up question. How much can we learn to continue to use in the future? And it sounds like in the past that in fact occurred. So hopefully, is there anything that you think that as part of this contract we'll be able to learn maybe similarly that we did in the past to be able to do some things in-house to be able to manage as changes occur over the next several years? Is there anything additional that we might gain from this?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the advantages of bringing a consultant like TMD on board is that they've done this all over the country. They've done this in dozens of places. They've seen what's worked and what hasn't worked in other areas. And that's something that, you know, as staff, I've been here for 17 years, so I'm pretty rooted here in San Diego, and I don't have that opportunity to see as well as TMD staff would how things are working in other parts of the country. So I think that's one of the real positive advantages of bringing in a consultant that's done this in other places.
And in terms of size of the amount, what was the contracted amount back in 04, 06, do you remember, or magnitude?
It was approximately 700,000.
Oh, twice the cost, okay. From the scoring sheet on page 3 that we have in our backup here, we don't actually have the actual scores and applications, but you have a summary here. The technical score remained the same after they were invited to come back and get interviewed. The cost score changed for both of them, and just curious why the numbers on the cost score changed the way that they did, given that the technical score did not change.
Well, sometimes with plans like this, they read the specifications differently and have maybe don't understand the depth of what a particular task might be. So as a group, we had people from finance, procurement, planning, myself, marketing, to go through the scope with the interviewers, the people that we were interviewing, and really kind of drill down to what it is exactly we were asking for in the specifications.
Right, but my question's on the cost score.
So what they were able to do is go back and determine, well, maybe the level of effort I need for this particular task was not what I thought it was.
Right.
So they were able to reduce what the number of hours they thought were going to be needed for that task.
Right, but the so just looking at the score and how many points they received, they both reduced their cost proposal, but the points that were awarded
for just the cost.
Yeah.
And
how did that determination get made?
I think Diane Singleton is here. She's our procurement.
Okay.
She can speak to that because procurement handles that. It's not something that we
do. Okay. And maybe you can answer the other question, which is on the DBE, disadvantaged businesses, and the component of that in this contract.
Is it on? Okay. So as far as the first question goes, why the technical score didn't change, when the panel determines that there really isn't such a significant change that warrants a change in the technical score, we don't change it.
Okay. And what about in the cost score? Because those did change.
Yeah. So when the cost score goes down, we recalculate the score again, and then we have the new scores.
So is 20 the maximum score allowed? Is that for the best price?
Was 20? I'm not sure. I don't know.
It was 20%, so it was 20 out of 100 points.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the best score gets 20 every time?
Yes.
Or the best price, excuse
me. The lowest score gets 20
every time. Thank you. That makes sense. And then on the disadvantaged businesses, what is the plan or what was presented in terms of participation?
So what we do... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So what we do for every procurement is we reach out to DBEs when we're ready to solicit this, the procurement, and we let them know that we'll be posting it. We reached out to DBE subcontractors, I believe 3 or 4, and then it's up to them to download the solicitation and determine if they're willing to be a subcontractor or a prime under this contract.
So is there an expectation that there might be some subcontractors? I just don't have the actual... bid here, so I don't know whether there is any subcontractors.
TMD does have a subcontractor, Kimley Horn.
Okay.
Yeah. But DBEs were emailed regarding the solicitation, okay, like we always do.
Does the representative from TMD wish to speak on this? on that component?
Russ, he's asking you a question.
Would you like to maybe speak to that issue of the disadvantaged businesses and what is there any participation in the subcontractors that you will be working with?
Thank you. Not at this time. In the previous contract, we did have substantial DBE participation. Those were the tasks that MTS took in-house this time for the TOP, were the ones where having the DBE expertise added value to the proposal. This time, we went through and we looked at it and didn't perceive that it would add value to the proposal. It would add cost, but not necessarily value.
How many subcontractors do you expect to be working on
this?
Just
one.
Just one, okay. Thank you.
I did it five times, he did it once. are you gonna be looking, I'm sure, I can't tell, are you gonna be looking at fares also or just operations?
The concurrent to this, the SANDAG is the lead on the fare ordinance, and so they're doing a fare study right now, and we're participating in that. So it's not part of the COA, it's just kind of a parallel path.
Okay, so I would maybe talk to them. The reason I'm asking them now, our family is now participating in transit with my girls at high school and needing to get the bus home because mom's at work and all that stuff. So I went down to the transit store, and I, for some reason I thought there was a daily youth fare, but there's only a monthly pass. So we're somewhere in between where it wouldn't be cost effective to get the whole pass, but then there's not a daily. And on the day she's riding the bus, we're running around getting a baggie with change and dollar bills to make sure she has. It's just, you know, I'm experiencing it now as a consumer. And then at my work, we have a mom with a bunch of kids, and, you know, she won't take the bus or trolley because it's not cost effective because she has to pay adult fare for all her kids to go three stops to the Padre games or something like that. So it's just, you know, various variations on that maybe these are just anecdotal stories, but maybe it's more pervasive why people aren't riding or, you know, what they would, you know, what could be done to get them on the trolley and buses. So just comments. All right, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I would just I had a lot of questions at the executive committee, was able to ask some of those. Mr. Alvarez asked a couple that I had asked. I would just say the couple points of information that I received from that committee that I wanted to share in this setting with my fellow board members who don't sit on the executive committee is that I learned that this should be done about every 10 years or so. And so we're on schedule in terms of taking the comprehensive review that was done a while ago and updating it through this slightly more modest effort, but still a fairly robust thing. So we're about on schedule in terms of what a best practice may be. The cost seemed, I think, in line based on the question Mr. Alvarez asked in terms of being roughly half. There's a large public input component of this, and I think we all as board members have responsibilities to try and telegraph to our constituents the need to weigh in on this. And Sharon, I don't know if you want to, you mentioned that it sounds like you're getting a good response so far. What does that mean? I mean, are you getting through internet stuff or people showing up at some of the pop-up events in the community?
Yeah, both, all.
Okay.
We're getting, Dennis mentioned, we had over 700 surveys filled out so far, and it's still open until what date?
It's open until the 23rd.
So, and we'll continue to take, obviously, feedback after that. Well, the nice thing is that we sent out an email to all of our kind of constituency groups and social service groups, as well as to the cities themselves and the planning departments in the various cities in the county. And they were able to then send it out to their listservs. So we're hopeful that we'll get as much feedback as possible within this whole time frame. Just now, Equinox was here talking, and I gave him my card and said, have your people fill out this as well, since they're interested in improving infrastructure. So I think it's going to be a really dynamic effort, and the public is very excited. You know, some of the concepts that they're throwing out are obvious to us, you know, expand the span of service at night, you know,
right.
Add in service on the Sundays. But they may come up with something that we're missing, you know, that we haven't seen.
Right. So I just ask the fellow board members, assuming this passes, which, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to make a motion for approval and encourage my colleagues' support to spread this information far and wide. As Sharon mentions, I think particularly for those who aren't currently writing the system, I think if you're on the system, you're likely to know about this. But to perhaps Ms. Zaff's point about folks who are maybe on the edge of becoming writers more frequently, it'd be helpful to know from an operational perspective what that would be. And while that may not be fares exactly, obviously it costs a buck or two to run a trolley or run a bus. Sharon alluded to, I know this is not the right setting, but there's a way to put more money in the system, and hopefully folks will avail themselves of that later this year. But in the meantime, as we prepare or hope to have that, it would be wise to be able to spend that money as efficiently as possible, and I think that's really the intent behind this measure. So to the extent that we're following best practices, we have a pretty good deal with the contractor, and that this is really an effort to engage our riders on how to improve our system, I think this is a no-brainer. I'm happy to move the recommendation, and I hope my colleagues will support that.
Thank you. I would like to attest to the fact that our staff is doing a tremendous job on the outreach. I was at the Santa Fe Depot earlier this week, and Mr. Desmond was down there with another staff member and trying to capture people, well, not really, but trying to capture their comments as they're coming from the coaster and flooding the downtown area. And I've also seen them in Old Town. So, Mr. Desmond, thank you for your diligent outreach. And then also, right there on the street, Mr. Desmond and I were doing just some real-time strategy on, you know, is this where the pop-up should be? Should we move it across the street? So, you know, it's a work in progress. And but I'm very pleased to see the outreach. And then also, just to let other board members know, this item will also be heard this afternoon at the Accessibilities Committee meeting, so we'll be engaging those member agencies as well. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak on this subject? If not, I have a motion from Mr. Glory. Is there a second? Ms. Cole. Thank you. No further discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much. We're going to also go down to the report items, and under item 60, Chairman's report, I'm going to defer to Mr. Roberts, who has some important information to pass on to you.
Well, first of all, for Councilmember Gloria and Councilmember Sankey, who joined us yesterday at a pretty exciting event, we started the day, Paula and I, and coming down from Los Angeles, from APTA, Harry came down the night before, but all of us were with the federal officials who came from Los Angeles to have a legal signing and a commitment for a full funding agreement for the Mid-Coastline. And I hope all of you get a chance to be involved with a $1 billion grant someday, but I'll tell you, it's pretty exciting when you sign the documents and a few minutes later you're told the first $100 million has been transferred into your account. You can sign the contracts for the construction of the Mid-Coastline, which is going to serve residents from literally a line that goes from the border all the way up to UTC with stops at the university and at the Veterans Hospital. This is the largest transit or transportation project ever in San Diego County. In fact, we were even looking at all the freeways and everything else that's been done. And this is, it's far and away the biggest grant we've ever received. So we're looking forward to getting this started. There'll be a groundbreaking on October 22nd, which is a Saturday. It'll be at the Price School up near Genesee Avenue. And for any of you that would like to attend, it's gonna be a big day. We're gonna have a picnic and food and community event for anybody we would like to join us. But the as they said, the check's not in the mail, it's in our bank account now, and you're going to see this get started. And I don't know anything more significant that's going on. So it's going to happen. It's going to take a while, and there's going to be a lot of mess during construction, but we're going to keep this thing online and get it done.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson, and of course, thank you on behalf of the board for the tremendous number of hours and effort that you've put into this, both as chairman of SANDAG and your role of seeking out and speaking to the many organizations and individuals to get their support for this, which has really made a difference. So we thank you very much. All right, do you have anything to report, Paul?
I just need to report on travel. On July 29th, I went to San Jose for a California Transportation Association Executive Committee meeting. On August 25th, I traveled to Washington, D.C. for an APTA Executive Committee meeting. And on September 10th to the 14th, I was in L.A. for the APTA annual meeting.
Yes, and I want to report that I, too, was in Los Angeles for the APTA annual meeting. And are there any board member communications? Seeing none, I have been asked by the individuals who spoke earlier from Grand Central West under public comment. I realize now that I probably should not have allowed that because it was directly related to an item on our agenda. I did, giving them their chance to speak. They now claim that they have a right to speak to the item. I will grant that right, but I will consider this as an organized presentation and grant you a total of 3 minutes to say whatever you need to say that you haven't said before. So you can decide who's going to speak.
Thank you, Chairman Mattis. They told me to stick to the policy, but there's so much story to tell here. There's reams of it, and I would encourage everybody to get to know the real story. We had a public resolution issued in 2001 to take private property with public funds, constructed with public funds for public use, and it's been used by the public since 2004. Why are we being excluded from access to it? In 2012, Greyhound, through a sole source lease, began to decentralize and reconfigure a project that had been vetted for 10 years by regional stakeholders, the community, and it's doing a lot of harm to your constituents. Isolating the McDonald's building now with a scissor gate so that old ladies and disabled people and people with luggage cannot use that building or elevator to access the bus, and hurting Greyhound's bus competition, it's wrong. And you know, as I tried to explain, we've been there 30 years. We represent the community, and through the mailbox business, a lot of the border crossers who ride the trolley, and this is the will of the people, and this is what was vetted. And the harm that's being done right now is it's proliferated wildcatting, illegal solicitation of transportation services, because Greyhound put a lower bus terminal, and we have people now going to the lower, to the upper, back and forth, around, and there's confusion. So I really, there's a lot I'd like to say, but this policy needs to be evaluated by the board, because we're not gonna go away. We've, you know, survived peso devaluations, their construction, GSA's ongoing construction, 9/11, and that port of entry, the pedestrian port of entry, needs to become efficient, and it needs to have policies that are going to support the cross-border mobility. So there's a closed session item on this matter. I encourage the board to really ask the hard questions and find out what's going on, and I'm happy to answer those afterwards.
Okay, you have another 30 seconds if anyone wishes to say anything.
Steve, would you like to take those 30 seconds? I just encourage everybody to see the opportunities we have there to create something that is going to make our entire region proud, and it's not the current policies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Geary. Okay, I do have one more request to speak. This is by another member of the audience here, and rather than hold her over for the time that we're going to be in a closed session, I'm going to give her an opportunity to speak under comment. So, Ms. Hightower, you may speak. Ms. Hightower, yes, the microphone, please.
We need benches on 30, I mean 41st and Ocean View by the park. We need benches on 41st and National, 30th and Imperial, because the business there is growing, and I do business there, but the bus, being that it's on number 4, only runs up every half an hour. You know, San Diego has grown. We got kids that are actually trying to work and go to school in that area, and they need sufficient transportation. The drivers need to carry Lysol. You know, funk offends everybody. Sometimes you have people getting on these buses where the windows don't open and they smell like they came out of raw sewage. You know, and that stench stay in your nose. The 955 is still being ran like it's an open bar on Sundays. And the buses need to run on Sundays like they do during the weekday. You know, the 4 only runs every hour on Sunday morning. That means I have to get up at 4:30 to go praise the Lord at a 9 o'clock service. So you guys really need to ride around town and see what's going on. You know, hey, you guys are us in a higher form. You need to walk around, ride around, and see what we endure on those buses and trolleys. These drivers, I don't know who's training them. They have no respect. They have no patience. They pull up as a rolling stop and don't give a chance for an elder or a person that really, really shows their disabilities. I wear knee holders and I have plates in my spine. They just pull off. They come to a screeching halt when it comes to stopping at the stops. And it's really dangerous. The buses are overcrowded. The trolleys are overcrowded. You got pit bulls eating the trolley doors and the rubber off the doors. So I just challenge you guys to come up and come outside and ride the bus and the trolley so you can see what we go through. And thank God I got blessed with some mints, because each time I tell somebody, can you please stop smoking, you know, they get indignant. So I got blessed with some mace. Here's another thing, you know, transit do have bicycles. You got a lot of security guard that are bored. Put them on the bicycles and let them patrol these bus benches and tell people, hey, if you're not catching the bus, can you go back to that liquor store that you bought that drink from? That's all. Just be honest. That's all I got to say for this day. God bless.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hightower, and you're right on time. All right. We will, as the last item of business, we will adjourn into closed session.
All right. We're back in open session. Our counsel will report out.
All right. On item 24A, closed session conference with labor negotiators related to 3 different bargaining groups. The board received a report from negotiators and gave instructions. On item 24B, conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation, Jones and Leon v. MTS, the board received a report from legal counsel and gave instructions. On item 24C, closed session conference with legal counsel existing litigation regarding MTS versus Grand Central West, the board received a report from legal counsel. And on item number 24D, closed session conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, one potential case regarding Gary Sweetwood et al. The board received a report and authorized denial of a claim on a vote of 15-0. Thank you.
That concludes our business. Our next meeting will be October 13th, and we are adjourned. Thank you.